You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. Okay, let's do some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. That's obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. To reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. Here's the thing. Information is power. Information is money. Literally, the currency of today's world of entrepreneurship is information. And if you could bring all of the information about your business into one dashboard, this is incredibly valuable. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of the truth about your business. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. This is so valuable. You just hit a button and you can see all the information about your business instead of having to like call five different departments and get all these emails and put it all together and make sense of it. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/James. 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 Look, I talk a lot about side hustles and I give a lot of step-by-step guides. I think in what I'm calling the Great Reset, everyone is going to need to learn some of these side hustling skills, whether it's how to do marketing in this new world or how to set up blogs or websites or a little bit of both. I really love what this one company is doing, Learn.com, L-U-R-N.com. Their whole point is, it's easy for you to learn these skills. Once you learn the skills, you could start making money almost immediately. So what I want people to do is check out this free on-demand workshop. My friend Anik Singhal is giving the workshop. The workshop is specifically set aside for you guys, my listeners, and Anik is going to show you how to launch and scale an online business with nothing more than an email address. So if you're dropped in the middle of a desert and all you've got is an email address and an internet connection, Anik is going to tell you how to make a sizable business from it. Not just a side hustle, but a business. And he's going to show you how to generate passive income simply by mailing affiliate offers from smart marketers around the world. So I've described affiliate deals a little bit in the past, but if you don't know what they are, it's an excellent way to make money using a blog or email marketing or Twitter or whatever. So Anik has this specific free on-demand workshop to discover how to do this, how to use your email address to build a significant income side hustle that can generate thousands a month in passive income. Go to www.learn.com/altucher. That's www.learn.com/altucher.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show.
Welcome to the second episode of Side Hustle Fridays. And I'm going to talk today about one of my favorite topics, writing, and particularly how you could potentially make a living from writing, and not only just writing, but book writing pretty quickly. So I'm going to give 6 different 30-day book challenges. Some of you have heard me talk about some of these, but I'm going to try to elaborate a little bit more. I'm going to talk a little bit about the steps you would take and how to self-publish and the whole thing. First, a little story. There's a lot of people say to me, oh, well, I would love to write a book, but I'm not a writer. And I get it. Nobody starts off a writer. It's not like Hemingway woke up one day and is like, oh, I'm going to just write one of the best novels ever, The Sun Also Rises. He worked at it every single day for years. But I'm not saying you have to work for it. The way I structure these 30-day book challenges, you don't even have to think like a writer at all. I'll give you the basic writing techniques that you need. And even if you don't want to, even if you want to speak it and not write it, I have some solutions for you. So bear with me. But first off, why write a book? Why write it in 30 days? Is it possible to write a book in 30 days? What's the point of all of this? And so on. And by the way, everybody has a different reason to write a book. So when I was younger, when I was like 21 or 22 years old, literally the only reason I wanted to write a book is because I was so insecure with who I was. I felt like I needed the label author to be impressive. And so I wrote novel after novel after novel. This is in the 90s. And they were all horrible. Like, it is a really difficult skill to learn how to write well. But that's not what we're talking about today. We're talking about good reasons to be a writer and how to easily write your first, not only your first one book, but using the techniques I described, you can write your first 100 books. And I'm not even exaggerating. So one friend of mine, I've done a couple podcasts with him, Steve Scott. He, at one point, I haven't talked to him in years, but I remember when I talked to him on the podcast, he was making $60,000 a month just because he had self-published, I don't know how many books, somewhere between 50 and 100. He had published so many books that he had to publish under several different names. There's another guy who I follow on Amazon. I actually haven't bought any of his books, but I'm fascinated by how many books he's written. His name's Patrick King. And he writes all these little books about small talk. Like, I'm going to look up Amazon Patrick King. And I've never spoken to this guy. He seems like a good guy. I don't know him. But here's like some of his books. Here's a book called Improve Your People Skills. Here's another book called The Science of Likeability. Here's one called Conversation Tactics, an entire book about that. And then right next to it, here's a book called Chatter, Small Talk, Charisma, and How to Talk to Anyone. And then here's another book, Conversationally Speaking. Here's another one, Improve Your People Skills. So, and these books are probably all completely different, and people are buying, I don't know if people are buying all of them, but like, for instance, let's look at this one. Learn to think using riddles, brain teasers, and wordplay. Develop a quick wit, think more creatively and cleverly, and train your problem-solving instincts. And that one just came out a few weeks ago, and it's got 5 reviews. It's $3.99. And, oh, here's another one, The Art of Thinking Clearly. Looks good. And it's ranked number 5 in educational psychology and number 5 in business leadership training. So it's doing pretty good. You know what? And it's available on Kindle, audiobook, hardcover, paperback on Amazon. I'll get to that in a second because there's some things that are a little confusing to people. But first, I'm gonna buy this book. I always am looking at his books. I'm gonna buy one. All right, place order. There we go. One of Patrick King's 100 books, and I know I'm pretty sure he also writes under various names as well. Because when you write so many books, you don't want people. I don't know what you want people to do, but for whatever reason, when you write 100 books, all these guys publish under a bunch of different names. But the point is, let's say everybody averages, I don't know, let's just say they average $300 per month per book. That's not impossible. He's selling a book for $3.99. He gets about, I think, 70% of that. So that's, you know, let's say it's closer to $3. So basically, he just has to sell 100 copies of that book per month. And some months he might sell thousands, some months he might sell zero, but he just has to average 100 copies a month. And if he has 100 books, if he has, let's say he has 50 books, that's $15,000 a month. If he has 100 books, that's $30,000 a month. Now, how do you write 100 books? I'll get to that in a little bit. Let's first write the first book. But another important piece of this is we're not just talking about writing a book. In these Side Hustle Fridays, I am not just talking about one source of income. I'm talking about how to scale vertically and horizontally. So the way you scale vertically here, I might be getting the directions wrong, but the way you scale vertically in writing books is you write many books. The way, and you make more money, you make income from each book. That's multiple sources of income. The way you scale horizontally is what I call the spoken wheel approach. Let's say you write a book about golf. Okay, then you do a podcast. Here, that's one spoke. Then you do a podcast about golf. Then you do a newsletter about the latest golf equipment. Then you set up an e-commerce store for the latest golf equipment. Then maybe you do, you make a golf coaching exchange, match beginning golfers with coaches. I'm just riffing here, but everything you do, there's always two ways to scale. And using this spoke and wheel idea, maybe you make an online course, an online newsletter, a video series, who knows? Maybe you do affiliate deals with golf equipment companies. Again, who knows? But I'm going to describe now 6 different 30-day book challenges. Each one of these ideas that I'm going to give you can be written from beginning to end in 30 days. You could even get a cover. You could publish it. You could make a paperback and a Kindle and hopefully even an audiobook. So first off, I want to address, some people say, oh, this guy just self-published. That doesn't count. Believe me, it counts. Self-published books in general. A friend of mine did a study. Hugh Howey wrote the science fiction series Wool, and he's written a bunch of other books. Wool sold over 1 million copies. I think it's going to be a movie as well. But he started off self-publishing Wool. And remember that movie, The Martian, starring Matt Damon? Well, Andy Weir, who's been on my podcast, he self-published The Martian. And remember that tiny little book, 50 Shades of Grey? Well, guess what? E.L. James started off self-publishing it. And I remember the guys at Amazon were telling me that when she sold 250,000 copies of 50 Shades of Grey, she came to them and said, hey, will you guys officially publish my book? Because they own a publishing company called, I think it's called Thomas and James or something like that. And they said no to her. So she went to a major publishing company, Random House or Simon & Schuster, one of those. And I think she sold like 50 million copies of her book. And there's a bunch of movies and a bunch of books. And she's practically a billionaire from 50 Shades of Grey now. So that's part of book writing too. Everybody rejects everybody. Why did Amazon reject her? I don't know. Maybe because it was a horribly written book or it was like soft porn or whatever. But who cares? Nobody cares. The beauty of the Kindle when it came out is that people started downloading soft porn books because nobody could tell. It wasn't like Fabio on the cover, you know, flexing his muscles. Nobody could tell what you're reading. It looks like you're really studious on the bus reading from your Kindle when you're actually reading 50 Shades of Grey. By the way, one of my self-published books, I think I've mentioned this before, but one of my self-published books, I did a little bit of an experiment. I took 50 Shades of Grey. I hired a grad student to go over every single word in the book and change it to a synonym. So it was the exact same book as 50 Shades of Grey, but every word was different. So instead of saying something like, you know, she had to rush home for finals, it might say, you know, Jane had to quickly get to her apartment in time to study for her tests or something like that. And so let me see. I haven't looked at this one in a while. I forgot the name of it, but I just remembered the name of it. It's called How to Satisfy a Billionaire. I can't even remember what pseudonym I used. Let's see. How to Satisfy a Billionaire, Story of a Shy Girl. That was the subtitle, by Jackie King. Oh my gosh, and there's one review. Let's see. It's only ranked 2 million in the Kindle store, meaning it's not doing well at all. Oh, so here's the review. The review was left. I got 5 stars from my one customer review. It was, I don't know who this guy is. It was on December 2nd, 2019. One of the best books I've ever read. An incredibly gripping, original, and sexy story told from the perspective of a girl plagued with the monotony of everyday life. When a chance opportunity allows her to step outside the world, Brenda dares where lesser women might cower. Another brilliant work by Jackie King. Story of a shy girl proves that provocative fiction is still alive and well. All right, I think he's being a little sarcastic, but that's one of my self-published books. I will tell you, I've published one, two, my third self-published book was Choose Yourself. I've self-published what through Amazon. And by the way, when I say self-published, I don't just mean the ebook. Again, I mean the ebook, the paperback, sometimes the hardcover, sometimes the audiobook, everything. You want to look as professional as possible. I can't stand it when I go to some self-published book and there's just the Kindle version. That's not good. Oh, and I was saying earlier, Hugh Howey did a study on this. He found out that the average self-published book on Amazon had higher star ratings than mainstream published books. He also pointed out that the average self-published book had higher Amazon rankings, meaning that they were selling more than the average mainstream book. No one has ever asked me, oh, did Houghton Mifflin publish your book? No, nobody cares. They just know you published a book. That's it. So, and so what if you self-published? Make up a name of a publishing company. It's like, oh no, XYZ Publishing published my book. You could do whatever you want. There is no more stigma to self-publishing. Just write an interesting book. And that's what I'm going to show you how to do after this long introduction I'm doing to this. But I self-published two books back in like 2011 or 2012, just as almost an experiment. Then I did Choose Yourself, where I hired a professional designer, a professional interior designer, an editor to help proofread it, and so on. I did what I called professionally self-published. I did an audiobook, I did a paperback, hardcover. And the great thing about self-publishing is that I could control the marketing. So I could, and I could control the price, and I can control when it comes out. So right after I finished the book, I waited about 2 months because I had some marketing planned, and then I published. I built up some, you know, I didn't have to wait a year, which you normally have to wait with mainstream. Like, I have a book coming out with HarperCollins in February, and I'm grateful I do. I go back and forth. You don't want to do too much of one thing. I like to switch it around. I've done around 10 self-published books, and now this is the first one in a really long time where I'm publishing mainstream. But I finished my book a few months ago. It's not coming out till the end of February, and you know, and I can't set the price. So they'll price it at whatever. But with a self-published book, I would price the Kindle at 99 cents. I would publish the hardcover at as cheap as I could, maybe $10, $11, $12. So I know one thing that attracts people to buying a book is if it's cheaper. So if two books, if they can't, they haven't read the book yet, so they don't know, if they're deciding between two books, they don't know which one's better. They just see the cover and they read the description. So, and they see the price. So I know, all things being equal, if I'm cheaper, they're going to buy my book. So I always, when I self-publish, I try to make it as cheap as possible. But by the way, the book I made the most money on is Choose Yourself, which was self-published and was mostly priced at 99 cents. But that's because I was also able to work out different marketing deals. Like, I would say to people, oh, you know, if you recommend this book and I'll, the hardcover, you know, I'll do some split with you, and so on. So there's all sorts of marketing techniques and tricks, and not gimmicks, but the most important thing is to write an interesting book. So, and I will add one more thing about self-publishing. I heard this in a talk being given by Tucker Max in 2014, maybe. He said one reason to self-publish a book is, and he's, I'll put it in my words, I wish I could read the book that my great-great-grandmother would have written. I know she came to America from Europe and she had to sneak on the boat and she hid in a suitcase for the entire trip across the Atlantic Ocean. And that's the only thing I know about her. I don't even know her name. I wish I could read a book by her. So if you could write a book and all you want, it might be that all you want is for your great-great-great-grandchildren to know who you were, because that part of our history is all gone. We know about, you know, the great invent. We know about Abraham Lincoln. We know about George Washington. We know about, you know, all the emperors and empresses and kings and wars, but we don't know about our great-great-grandparents. And that's such a beautiful reason to write a book, as well as writing a book called How to Satisfy a Billionaire, which had its own pleasures as well. So anyway, what the point of each of these 30-day book challenges is this. I didn't want to give it any challenge where the book couldn't be done in a month. So the idea is, any idea, any challenge I give you, the book can be done in a month. The book does not have to be big. 30 to 50 pages is a fine size for a self-published book. So the definition of a book has changed. Like when I write a book for HarperCollins or any mainstream publisher, they want the book to be a certain size, 250 pages, 60,000 words, because they want it to look good in a bookstore. They're selling it to bookstores and they have a certain idea of what a book looks like. It should be 60,000 words. That's, you know, even it's in my contract, actually, how many words the book should be, give or take. But in this world of self-publishing, there's no, you could write a one-page book. I know people who have done that, written one-page books. You could write a 5,000-page book. I know people who have done that. My friend Kamal Ravikant, he wrote a book, Love Yourself, Like Your Life Depends on It, back in 2011 or 2012. I'm pretty sure he sold over 1 million copies of that book for a night, you know, about $3.99. And again, at Amazon, you get 70% of that. And you know, I think he's priced higher if he sells the paperback, and I know he sells a lot of the audiobook as well, but this is 2012. It's still selling every month. I mean, now he's actually republished it with a mainstream publisher, but that was just last year. But his book, when he self-published it, was 8,000 words. And just to give you an idea, the average book is about 300 words a page. So his book was less than 30 pages. I mean, he stretched it out. He spaced it out accordingly. He had some blank pages in between chapters. It was beautifully done. And he made a lot of money over that. I mean, he was making a living from that book for a long time. So there's no, you get to make the definition of a book now. We get to choose ourselves. We don't have to wait for the agent. We don't have to wait for the publisher. We don't have to wait for the sales department of the publisher, the sales department of Barnes & Noble, the editor, the whoever. You could just come up with a good idea, write it, and upload it to Amazon, make an audiobook, upload that to Audible, check the box for paperback. You'll get a cover from 99designs.com. But let me now finally start some of the challenges for you. So, but first I want to give, remember the criteria of a book challenge. The book can be done in a month, doesn't have to be big. There should be many opportunities for sequels and other spokes, other sources of income. And even if the idea is not great, it gets you going and you can create an interesting book. And the book should also be easy to market. Now, the other thing that's important in these 30-day book challenges is that I'm giving all of you the same challenge. So doesn't that mean, you might think, doesn't that mean you're all going to write the same book? No. And that's how I'm going to explain it with each book challenge, why it's different. It's really important that people learn the skills that are going to be required in what I'm calling the Great Reset, this period that we're beginning to experience right now. And I want to tell you about my friend Anik. So in 2008, Anik Singhal was $1.7 million in debt and his company was on the verge of collapsing. I think we got along because he kind of reminds me of myself. And his mistake was he had forgotten one of the golden rules of being an entrepreneur: stick with what's working. So after a few bad business deals, Anik finally returned to a simple five-step program he used to launch his business in the first place. He dug himself out of the hole. His first year doing this, he booked $10 million a year in sales, and he has never looked back. I am really impressed with him. And he is going to give a free workshop to my listeners only to teach what he did, because it is people use side hustles, this side hustle, that. What you really want to do is build a business with as little work as possible. And I know this because I'm lazy, but I love building businesses that keep me independent, that let me do what I want, that let me pursue my passions. So today his system, Anik's system, is responsible for over $250 million in sales, and he's taught it to over 30,000 people worldwide. People like Kane, who used the system to generate over $20,000 a month in passive income, or Daniel was able to quit his 9-to-5 job just 4 months after discovering Anik's system. And Ippo, one of Anik's students in Greece, who makes $8,000 a month or more using a simple 5-step system, the system Anik is teaching people. So what they and many others have discovered is the ultimate side hustle, a way to launch a business today with nothing more than an email address and a mentor to show you the way. I always suggest to learn something, you need a plus, minus, equal. A mentor or virtual mentor to teach you, a minus, so for someone for you to teach, and equals, people who are struggling with you. You exchange notes and you learn from them. Everybody is struggling right now. This is an opportunity to learn skills. You could show others and you could build up your wealth, not just make $8 an hour walking dogs or delivering food. This is the real deal. I know, Anik, it's the skills I wish I had known back in 2008. So for listeners of my show today, Anik has recorded a very special workshop just for you. And you have to go to this specific URL because it's just for you. So discover how to use your email address to build an income-generating business that can generate thousands a month in passive income. Go to www.learn.com/altucher. That's L-U-R-N, learn, L-U-R-N, www.learn.com/altucher. Okay, the first 30-day book challenge is called, your title is going to be roughly, if you want, 10 scientifically proven ways to blank. And you're going to have to fill in the blank. 10 scientifically proven ways to blank. Just want to address the number 10. Why do people like articles? It's like, oh, my 10 favorite quotes from Gandhi. The 10 favorite habits I learned from, you know, Eleanor Roosevelt or Thomas Edison or Elon Musk. Like, people like listicles, they're called. And I don't know why that's the case, but they do. So listicles have been around forever. I mean, Moses had the Ten Commandments. If they were just called the commandments, I bet it wouldn't have been so popular. Even Buddha, he had the Four Noble Truths and he had the Eightfold Path. But anyway, 10 scientifically proven ways to blank. So here's what I mean. I want you to go, there's a site called SSRN, SallySallyRogerNancy.com. And I want you to pick any category that interests you. By the way, so SSRN.com, this is a database of 950,733 research papers. So every paper ever written, but from an MIT researcher or professor or Yale, Harvard, all over the world, they're stored here. There's another one, jstor.com. So let's say I pick, you know, let's say I think this month, oh, everybody wants to have better habits. It's January, there's resolutions, or maybe out of this pandemic, people want to have better health habits or whatever. So let's see, I'll type in habits into SSRN.com. Now, the results came back. There's 1,583 scientific papers about habits. And here's one. This one comes from the University of Virginia, Darden School of Business, professor there. And the paper is called What Makes Entrepreneurs Entrepreneurial? And let's look at, find another one. The Influence of Social Media Addiction on Study Habits of College Students. That's interesting. Here's one, Good Habits with Asset Allocation, which means basically good habits with money. Here's one, Shattering Negotiation Myths, Empirical Evidence on the Effectiveness of Negotiation Style. Here's another one, Incentives to Exercise, and it talks about how to build the habits so that you feel incentives for exercise. Here's one, The Habits of Virtue. So it goes on and on. And by the way, I could have been even more specific. I could have typed in entrepreneur. So let's look at that for a second. So, and then you'll see what I'm driving at in a second. So essentially, So I typed in entrepreneur. There's 2,794 papers that showed up. So anatomy of an entrepreneur. What makes entrepreneurs entrepreneurial? The making of a successful entrepreneur. Anatomy of an entrepreneur, part two. Are successful women entrepreneurs different from men? Crowdfunding models. Understanding venture capital structure, the social dimensions of entrepreneurship, and that comes from Oxford University Press. Oh, and the professors from the University of Michigan. What are the social dimensions of entrepreneurship? It looks like basically what lessons from cross-cultural psychology can you use to be a better entrepreneur. And so entrepreneurs may partially overcome institutional deficiencies by relying on social networks that facilitate reputational bonding. Anyway, I don't even know what that means, but here's what I want you to do. Pick a word, any word, search SSRN.com for that word. There's going to be maybe thousands of results, almost no matter what word you pick. And I want you to pick your 10 favorites. I want you to read them. Now, here's the thing to know about academic papers. They are unreadable. Even what I just read to you, two sentences from the first paragraph of this, the social dimensions of entrepreneurship, unreadable. And so this is what's going to make your book valuable. You will read these 10 papers and just write a one-page summary. So, you know, I might take this paper, The Making of a Successful Entrepreneur. In this paper, we explore company founders' opinions and observations about their own trajectory and what influenced the success or failure of their business. By understanding what entrepreneurs think and believe, we hope to provide more insights into how to better support entrepreneurs and create blah, 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 blah. So this academic paper written by, this guy's from, he works for the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland, and he went to, and another guy went to, is at Stanford University. So we know they've done their research. Then we know they've done their work. And they're going to talk about what's the mindset of an entrepreneur. They're going to ask people, I haven't read the paper yet, they're going to say, what kind of motivations do founders of high growth companies have? What are their opinions about their own abilities to be a success or a failure? And they're going to probably talk about, they're going to probably do some sort of scientific study and then have a conclusion like, don't be motivated by money, be motivated by love for what you do. Or I'm just guessing, I have no idea. Or, you know, what was your attitude towards failure? Did it depress you, or did you analyze it and break it apart? And so now you could start building these different habits. So the point is that you take this academic paper, you have a chapter, maybe call it How to View Failure. And then right in the beginning, you'll describe, there was this scientific experiment done at Stanford. They interviewed 500 or 1,000 entrepreneurs. Actually, this is 549 entrepreneurs. And ask them, what did they think about their prior failure? How did they analyze their prior failures? And this was their conclusion, you know, that everybody said blah, blah, blah. And everybody started to build these habits after the first failure. So I'm just skimming through the paper right now, but it's all about different kinds of excuses people have, and entrepreneurs, how they view the concept of risk. There's lots of interesting things. So there's lots of interesting conclusions. So you'll basically take this unreadable paper and boil it down to a one-page summary. I mean, the paper itself is like 30 pages. Boil it down to a one or two-page summary, and you're allowed to reference, you're not plagiarizing, you're allowed to reference and summarize someone else's work. This comes from Stanford, so it's legit. This is great. Like, factors that prevent others from, this could even be a whole chapter, this one page I'm looking at right now, factors that prevent people from becoming entrepreneurs. And here's another one, sources of funding for entrepreneurs. That's great. So look, you can refer to this, and then maybe you call this chapter the most important factors of preventing you from being an entrepreneur, something like that. And you write a personal story from your own life. Like, let me look at one of the factors right here. An unwillingness to take risks. And so I can say, well, there was one time I had a job and I didn't really like the job, but I had an opportunity to be an entrepreneur and start a business. I had a really good idea and I had a customer, and it wouldn't have been that hard for me to start up and serve that customer. And then I could have built a business. But I was so afraid to lose my stable salary that I didn't do that entrepreneurial. I didn't become an entrepreneur, and I stayed at the job. And 6 months later, they laid me off, or whatever your story is. Tell a story, and a story, as you know, should start off with a problem. So the problem is, it's called the arc of the hero. The hero starts off with a problem. In this case, should I be an entrepreneur or not? And you could go into details. This was the entrepreneurial opportunity. This was my job. What would you have done? I didn't know what to do. I had a family to feed, blah, blah, blah. So you get into the problem. And then there's an instigating incident that drives you further. Like, I decided, to not be an entrepreneur because my wife was pregnant and we needed a new home and I got scared and my mortgage was big and the American dream told me I needed the white picket fence and the yard and blah, blah, blah. So, and then maybe you go into how you decided to be more entrepreneurial and you have a better understanding of risk and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, you tell a personal story and then maybe you take a historical story. So for instance, you do the story of Damon John or let's do Richard Branson. So Richard Branson started an airline. Like, he was a 27-year-old kid, started an airline. And you would think, did he have an airline experience? Did he have business experience? Yeah, he had business experience. He published a little magazine about music in London for punk subculture or whatever. And he started an airline. What he did was he called Boeing and said, hey, can I buy? He didn't buy an airplane. He didn't buy a 747. He couldn't afford it. He didn't have any money. He called Boeing and said, hey, can I borrow an airline from you? And they, of course, laughed at him like, you're just a 27-year-old kid. And he said, wait, before you hang up, don't forget, in England, it's a monopoly, British Airways. So you have no pricing pressure against British Airways. If we set up a second airline, Virgin Air, Virgin Atlantic, he called it, then you'll have better pricing pressure against British Airways. So this is good for you. So how about you lend me a plane? I'll return it in a year, if my airline doesn't work out, and no risk to you. So he did a number of things like that in order to, not that he was unwilling to take a risk, but that was a different take on risk. He was taking a risk, but he was also reducing it at the same time. He didn't risk all his money and then some. He didn't risk investors' money. He examined the risk and figured out how to reduce it. So that might be, so again, this is the structure of every chapter. Find an academic paper you like, summarize it in a page or two, write a personal story in just a few paragraphs where you do the habit or suggestion recommended in this research paper, and you can always refer to the research paper. This is what these scientists concluded make better entrepreneurs. And then tell a story from history. And there's so many historical examples about entrepreneurship that if you're interested in it, you can even Google stories about entrepreneurship and you'll find plenty of stories. Do a chapter every 2 days. So on the first day, read the paper, summarize it. In the second day, write a couple of paragraphs that's your personal story. Write a couple of paragraphs that's a historical story. Now you have three pages. Put a blank page in between chapters. So now you have four pages. And then within 20 days, if you do a new chapter every 2 days, within 20 days, you're going to have a 40-page book. Maybe more if you write more. Maybe a little less if you write less. Doesn't matter. I would aim for 30 to 40 pages at least, but who knows? So now you have 10 chapters. It's filled with interesting stories, not only your personal stories, and don't forget to be vulnerable in every story. That's a key to good personal storytelling, is be vulnerable. Everybody has problems. You have problems. Richard Branson has problems. Jeff Bezos just had private personal texts to his mistress shared all over the newspapers. So he's got problems, even though he makes a billion a minute or whatever. So always start a story with your problems, other people's problems, and then how they use the techniques of this scientific study that you started the chapter with to solve those problems. Again, you build 10 chapters, you're done in 20 days, spend a day or two checking for grammar, which you can easily do on Microsoft Word, go on 99designs.com and you can do what's called a reverse auction. You could say, look, here's the title of my book. I need a cover. Who can do it the cheapest? And artists, graphic designers from around the world will bid lower and lower to get the opportunity to do your book cover. So you'll get a book cover, get a back cover as well, and get some quotes from friends on there and from your mom and from your boss and whoever. And so now you have testimonials. Put in an acknowledgments page. If you want, do the audiobook. I definitely recommend. A lot of people now listen to audiobooks. I get more per month on Choose Yourself still, 7 years later, from my audiobook, which I did myself and uploaded to Audible, than I do from the paperback of Choose Yourself, and more every month from the audio. So anyway, that's book challenge number one. Let me see if I have any more notes on that one. Write a chapter, summarize the problem the paper points out, summarize their solutions and the studies they did to prove their solutions, give 1 to 3 historical examples, and ideally give an example from your own life. Now you have a chapter. And again, the entire point of this is scientists do not write for regular people. So you're providing a valuable service. You're translating these esoteric, scientific, proven things about being a better entrepreneur. You're translating it for the layman, and you're adding in stories and historical examples and your own examples. It's great. So now you do this 10 times. You have 10 chapters. You get a cover from 99designs.com. And on day 30, just Google, how do I self-publish on Amazon? And it'll take you to, well, I'll tell you right now, because they've changed the URL recently, but how to self-publish on Amazon. It'll take you to kdp.amazon.com. You simply upload your book into, and they'll put it into the Kindle format. You could click a box that says make it a paperback. You go to audible.com to upload the Audible, and that's it. You, my friend, will have a fully published book called 10 Scientifically Proven Ways to Be a Better Entrepreneur. And by the way, anybody else who does this strategy and even picks the same word as you, they're going to have a completely different book. They're going to pick 10 different papers out of the 2,798 papers that showed up. They're going to have different stories, different historical examples, different personal examples, different cover. So you don't have to worry about competing anybody. And you know, you don't have to pick entrepreneurship. You could pick negotiation. You could pick habits. Let's say I type in persuasion. I always like to be a better persuader. So here's the minimal persuasive effects of campaigns. Evidence from 49 field experiments, and this comes from Stanford also. So they figured out what were the most influential techniques that presidents use. So that's pretty useful. The psychology of malware warnings. So they look at the persuasive behavior of when you get a malware warning on your computer. Scam compliance and the psychology of persuasion. Post-it note persuasion. How post-it notes can help your persuasion or help you build new habits or help you persuade others if you give somebody a post-it note. Anyway, it goes on and on. So this is the first 30-day book challenge. You could do it easily in 30 days. A lot of times people say, well, how do I market it? I'll get to that in a second. But let me give you another book challenge. Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, of course, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb, while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a three-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you could try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
So one thing that I used to do is I used to plagiarize pretty heavily. And I don't mean plagiarize like what I did with 50 Shades of Grey, where I took the exact book and replaced every word with a synonym. That's true plagiarism and is actually illegal. I don't mean that kind of plagiarize. By the way, here's an interesting little story. Back in the 1960s, one of my favorite writers, Jerzy Kosinski, he wrote a book that won the Pulitzer Prize called Steps. It was a great book. It was a small book. I think it was only like 110, 120 pages. Beautiful book. And another guy, for his PhD thesis. I think it was his first PhD thesis. Another guy wanted to do a little experiment. So he retyped the entire book for steps. This was just like 5 to 10 years later. I forget. This guy retyped word for word, not even using synonyms. He used the exact same words as Jerzy Kosinski won the Pulitzer Prize with the book Steps. He submitted our hero then submitted the plagiarized book to 19 different publishers. Guess what happened? Every publisher rejected the book. Not a single one of these publishers said, oh my gosh, who is this guy? This is the most amazing book ever. And this is a book that honestly is very amazing. And also, it won the Pulitzer Prize. So if you're an editor in your industry, you would think you would have read the Pulitzer Prize winning books of the past 10, 15 years. But no, out of 19 publishers, none of them had ever read the book. None of them recognized it at all. And they all rejected it, even though it was brilliant. So I bring this example up to also tell you, don't take no from the gatekeepers. If you want to write a book, you could write it. If shitty books like 50 Shades of Grey sell 50 million copies, then that's fine. And if amazing books like Steps could win the Pulitzer Prize, but then are plagiarized and can't even get accepted by a publisher, you know the entire publishing industry is batshit insane. And why not you write a book? Who cares? Why not you? So here is the next book challenge, and it is related to the concept of plagiarism. And so what do I mean by that? So one time I wrote an article for TechCrunch, which is a big tech entrepreneurship blog, titled The 9 Surefire Ways to Fail at Everything. Okay, and I write illness, lack of creativity, indecision, carelessness, laziness, lack of focus, and on and on. Well, those 9 sections, those 9 words, like lack of focus or inertia, whatever, I 100% stole them. And what did I steal them from? There was a text written in around 300 BC called the Yoga Sutras. So the study of yoga comes from this religious text. It was a deeply religious text called the Yoga Sutras. And it was just a poem. It was a 195-line poem. And one of the lines basically says, translated from the Sanskrit, one of the lines says, here are the 9 ways, the 9 things that will prevent you from getting enlightenment. Because yoga really ultimately is about meditation and their views on enlightenment and spirituality. So I used the exact 9 words that was in the Yoga Sutras. So the 9 things that prevent you from getting enlightenment, according to this sacred text in the study of yoga, I used those exact words. I didn't change a thing in these 9, in this article, 9 surefire ways to fail at everything. And I've rewritten this article several times. I've rewritten it as 9 ways to fail as an entrepreneur. I've also reversed it like 10 ways to succeed, blah, blah, blah. But this was one of my most popular articles I had ever written for TechCrunch. It got hundreds of thousands of views. And every place where I posted it, it got, I think on like LinkedIn, it might've gotten a million views. So it got a huge number of views. And I took, you know, I basically took illness and I said, you know, the basics, like you have to keep healthy or else if you're not taking care of your health, you're not going to be creative. You're not going to be able to do sales. You're not going to be able to manage a team. You're not going to be able to execute. You won't be able to sell your company, blah, blah, blah. Lack of creativity and on and on. So the point is not that I plagiarized, is that here's what actually happened. The Yoga Sutras is, of course, you know, again, yoga is practiced all over the world. Millions and millions of people have read or studied the Yoga Sutras. And that's like a giant focus group that history gave me. So millions of people have basically, there's many texts that were written in 300 BC. This is the one that survives. This is the text that people saved and read and hung up on their wall and kept next to their bed. And they read over and over again from 300 BC all the way up to now. That's a gigantic focus group. So I know that every line in this text of the Yoga Sutras, I know that people really, really like it. I know that they like these 9 reasons that they can't succeed at X. And I know even the structure of that It's not like nine ways to get enlightenment. It's nine ways to fail. So I know even the structure of that, people had some primal response to. So I wrote the exact same structure and the same words, but I did idea sex. I combined that line in the Yoga Sutras with entrepreneurship. So I want you to do the same thing. Pick an area. Like I was talking to Robin earlier, my wife, and she said, well, parenting. Okay, pick an area you love, parenting or habits or being a lawyer or being a tennis player or music, and find your favorite, you know, religious text that has been focus grouped by the test of time. So it might be, you know, some text from Zen Buddhism, or it might be the Four Noble Truths of Buddhism, or it might be the Analects of Confucius or the Art of War. The Bible, who knows? It could be anything. I'll give you an example. Stephen Pressfield, a novelist, he wrote the book that became a movie, The Legend of Bagger Vance. It was about a guy played by Matt Damon, who is in Georgia in the 1920s, about to play in a golf tournament, and his caddy is played by Will Smith, and his caddy gives him this kind of mystical advice that helps him get over his problems. Well, Stephen Pressfield told me the exact structure, beat by beat, is the Bhagavad Gita, which is the most sacred text in Hinduism. So he took that sacred text and combined it with 1920s golf tournament in Atlanta, Georgia, and he made a best-selling book that became a movie starring Will Smith and Matt Damon, and it changed Stephen Pressfield's life forever. It was his first published novel. So he borrowed 100% from the structure of a story that was written 3,000 years ago, and he just applied it to something new. You can do the exact same thing. So what's some examples? Let me see. I will find it. Here's the Tao Te Ching, the Art of War, the Yoga Sutras, the Four Noble Truths, the Bible, the Quran, the Diamond Sutra from Buddhism, Proverbs from the Bible, or find something a little more secure. There's a text, Zhang Zi's Six Secret Teachings. So this is a book that went side by side with The Art of War, written by Sun Tzu, and there was a collection of books all about war. And, you know, it still withstood the test of time. Maybe not as popular as The Art of War, but who knows the reason why. We still have this book with us thousands of years later. So, for instance, let's look at chapter 6 of The Art of War. So what I want you to do is, I want you to take the structure of the book and some of the guidelines in the book, whether it's the Tao Te Ching or The Art of War or the Analects of Confucius, and I want you to apply it to your favorite topic. So, for instance, chapter 6 of The Art of War is called Weak Points and Strong Points. So the idea is you should not go to war unless you've analyzed the weak points and strong points of your enemy. So remember, I told you the story of Richard Branson in Virgin Atlantic. Guess what he did? He analyzed the weak points and the strong points of British Airways and the weak points and strong points of Boeing. So the weak point of Boeing is that they had no pricing pressure against a monopoly like British Airways. So he took advantage of that. And the weak point of British Airways was that people wanted an alternative. They didn't want to have only one choice in England. Even the Heathrow Airport gave him a landing strip so that the British Airways would have competition. And he also analyzed the strong points of Boeing and British Airways. So the strong point of British Airways, they had an infinite amount of money compared to Richard Branson. So he didn't fight that battle. He fought on the battle he could win by analyzing their weak points. I could go on, but look, I just took chapter 6 of The Art of War, weak points and strong points, and applied it to Richard Branson. I could also apply it to my own stories about starting different businesses. And look, maybe there's a time where I didn't research my opponent's weak points and strong points, and as a result, I messed up badly. I remember one time I was raising money for a hedge fund, and someone said to me, "Oh, have meet this one guy. He'll be great for you. He'll put money in your fund." And so I go meet this guy, and I knew he was like really wealthy, but I didn't know he was running his own hedge fund, and he had other things going on too. He was very concerned about security.
He said to me, he rejected my request for money. I didn't analyze his weak points or strong points. I didn't really come prepared. And he said to me, look, I would love to give you money, but you know, the last thing we need here at Bernard Madoff Securities, pointed him to himself, the last thing we need here at Bernard Madoff Securities is to see our name on the front page of the newspaper. So I left and I was disappointed. But boom, I just did the Art of War, Chapter 6, took a story from history, took a story from my personal life about weak points and strong points, and then you could write, you know, the war of business, or, you know, the war of entrepreneurship, or maybe, you know, Robin, my wife, would write, you know, how to fight the parenting war, or the art of parenting. You know, look for the weak points and strong points in your child. So I always knew with my kids, for instance, that they were always willing, when they were little, they were always willing to test the boundaries with me and misbehave. And if I yelled at them, that did nothing. That confirmed for them that they can get a reaction from me. But if I said to them, this was their weak point, if I said to them, you know what, Josie, I'm disappointed in you. I thought you were better than this. And I just walk away, then that would be the worst thing that could ever happen to them. And so by analyzing the weak points and strong points of my kid, parenting is war. Parents know what I'm talking about. By analyzing the weak points and strong points, Chapter 6 of The Art of War, that's a chapter in my book on parenting if I were to write one. Again, make a one-to-one analogy. Pick 10 concepts you like from the sacred text that you choose. Make a one-to-one mapping between your 10 favorite ideas on entrepreneurship or parenting or music or golf or whatever, and write the Tao of parenting, the Tao of golf, the Zen of entrepreneurship, whatever. This is every day, write one chapter. You write the title, which it comes straight from whatever text you're using. Then write a personal story, write a historical anecdote. Boom. In 10 to 20 days, you'll have a book, get a cover, upload it, you're done. Now, what's great about these two ideas is that there's room for sequels. So the first one, let's say I did 10 scientifically proven ways to be a better entrepreneur. I can easily write 10 more scientifically proven ways to be an entrepreneur. I could also write 10 scientifically proven ways to be a better negotiator, 10 scientifically proven ways to be a better lawyer. So, you know, you always want to think, how can I franchise this idea? So with this other one, I could do Zen and the Art of Parenting, Zen and the Art of Marriage, Zen and the Art of Sex, which, by the way, there was a book, The Tao of Sex, when I was a kid. My parents had it, so I was always trying to sneak it off their bookshelves. But this is not an unusual idea. There's a book, famous bestseller, called Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. There's a book called The Tao of Pooh about Winnie the Pooh. There's Zen and the Art of Archery. So this is a common, Stephen Pressfield wrote The War of Art instead of The Art of War. So this is a common strategy. So I just gave you two 30-day book challenges. You're going to hear this podcast on Friday. I have four more book challenges for you that I want to share, and I have more stuff to talk about this and self-publishing and how to make money with it. Here's what I want you to do, because I didn't get to all six, and I have to end this podcast or Jay is going to kill me. So I do not want to be killed by Jay, the audio engineer and / producer. So please tweet to me that, hey, you loved that podcast with the 30-day book challenges. You'd love to hear the next Side Hustle Friday one be the other four book challenges. And I'll throw in some stuff too about other ways you can make money once you write these books. I will give all four, I promise, next Friday. I mean, all six incompletely, but you know, I'll do two today, four next Friday. Tweet me at Jay Altucher or send me a text at 203-590-8607. And most importantly, the best way you can help me is not only give me that feedback, because that will determine if I talk about the other four book challenges in next Friday, but please subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already, and leave a review. It really helps me out. It's been years since I've, you know, the Apple algorithm, the Apple podcast algorithm depends on how many people write reviews recently. And so it really helps me when people write reviews, and I would love it. That would help me so much. And I really appreciate it. I really thank everybody. You know, join the Choose Yourself Facebook group. Anybody who writes a book based on these 30-day book challenges, I will do an entire podcast talking about each book, and you'll get some sales. So I will help out. You can ask me questions in Twitter, or join the Choose Yourself group on Facebook, and I'll answer questions there. Or send me text again at 203-590-8607 and give me feedback. Review this podcast. Let me know how Side Hustle Fridays are going, and what you want to see next week. If you want to see 4 new book challenges, 30-day book challenges. Remember, you can write a book a month. If each one makes on average $500, then by the end of the year, you're going to be making $6,000 a year. $6,000 a year. By the end of year two, you're going to be making $12,000 a year. So you're just going to, and then there's all these ancillary ways to make money too, which I'll talk about next week. So start now. It's not so hard. Trust me, once you get in the routine, it'll only take you like an hour a day, which I know you can do. I'll talk more about that next week if you want. I know people who wrote their first novels on the subway ride to work. Gosh, oh, the movie Pitch Perfect. The writer, who's a Facebook friend of mine, but I've never spoken to her, the writer, she used to write a page a day of the movie that became Pitch Perfect on her subway ride to work. And that was her first movie. And it was a huge movie, Pitch Perfect. Anyway, see you next Friday. That was today's 30-day book challenges. I hope you liked it. Thanks so much.
Also, for a listener, I just want to say this on the record. I'm not going to kill James. I'm going to write James a very angry tweet.
Jay, you're going to have to write a 30-day book about how much you can't stand dealing with me. And now I'm actually giving a lecture at Berkeley in 2 minutes. So I'm signing off.
All right. Thank you.
Jay, thanks, everybody. I really appreciate everyone.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.